And I think it's very educational. I think that's commendable when city officials do that. So I have to give Mike a white mark for that one. But getting back to this article by George Rain of the Examiner's staff, the California Highway Patrol declared Tuesday against evicting the seven, or decided Tuesday. Oh, wait a minute. We've got to say goodbye to the New Brighton State Beach campers. Let's have them suggest again where people can send their help, how people can, 48 hours is not much time to organize an alternative, particularly when you've... Billy, have a seat here before you go. You guys have just heard what Mayor Mike Rodkin's response is. He's not going to let you get a piece of property in the city to use. He is predicting, it sounds like he is encouraging police to sabotage any deal that you make with anybody within the city limits. I mean, that's my impression. What was the impression of you? Stanley, that was your impression, Stanley?
It seemed like any plan that we got, it seemed like a workable plan, you know, when everybody agreed on it and something like that. Just because we don't have a permit, it may take them 6 or 8 months or what have you. They have to figure out how much money they can make on their permit before they would allow us over there. So if anything we come up as a viable solution, they're going to throw us out or take us to jail, find somebody or do something. You know, I reckon it's all about a money thing, you know. It's like you said, it's about, you know, your wares and goods and what have you. It's whatever happened to free enterprise or a place to live on this planet just because of birthrights or something like that. I reckon, you know, what should we do? Take off to the hills and try and hide? Maybe
get out of town, Stanley.
Yeah.
Or get into the shelter if you can.
This is Billy. If you have any suggestions or anything, there are two ways to contact us. First of all, you can write in care of Dan Hopkins, P.O. Box 7966, Santa Cruz, California, 95061-7966. Or the park rangers out there at New Brighton, during the next 48 hours anyway, have been real good about giving us phone messages, and you could call and leave a message with any information out there, and they would be more than happy to deliver a message to us out there at New Brighton. I'm just saying here, it looks like
Dan, you can speak.
Here's Daniel. He can give you a little more information.
On that address, I'd like to repeat that address. It's in care of Daniel Hopkins, and the organization is Save Our Shelters Committee. And
thank you very much.
If you have a pencil ready, it's P.O. Box 7966, Santa Cruz, California. And the zip code is 95061-7966. And if you have a money order or checks to help us pay for another campground site, or if you can give us a piece of land, donation, rent us a piece of land, lease it, whatever, we'll even work your property if you have some property that needs to be worked in exchange for the rent. We have a lot of hard workers out there in the homeless population at New Brighton Beach. Thank you.
We have a caller on the air now, Dan. I believe it's... how you doing, caller?
Oh, it's John.
Hi, John.
I was just thinking that Mike Rodkin's arguments about against having craftspeople down on the mall are utterly specious. If he were really concerned with people and working to change the climate of fear and anger and hatred against homeless people, he would be using his political leverage to make the Downtown Business Association and make it possible to have the craftspeople down there on the mall. There could be a small subsidy. All this bullshit about that they are providing they've paid their taxes and they provided the downtown mall, as it were, as bullshit. We the citizens, have provided that place down there for the businessmen, as the way I look at it. And Rodkin, as our representative, should be working with them to make available those spaces down there for like model of what can be happening for people who have the crafts and the arts to sell, but don't have the wealth to acquire a business property or a business front down there. Anyway, thanks.
Oh, sure, John. I mean, I think that's really true. Criminalization of homeless people in public spaces has been, I know, an issue you've been concerned about, I've been concerned about, and it looks like there will be going to be 37 more people concerned about it starting in 48 hours.
Right. Anyway, people are going to keep selling one way or the other and keep getting jailed and, you know, it's... Oh, anyway, talk to you sometime again.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
So So I'm in the studio here with Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who kind of strides two worlds. Dan, you've been involved in HUF protests, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. At the same time, you're one of the campers out at New Brighton Beach, which, as I understand it, the campers out there are not too interested in protest at the moment. Although as that clock ticks down to zero, and as the campers get the word that Mayor Mike Rodkin is just intransigent and refusing any kind of solution, proposed, even if the Citizens Committee for the Homeless reversed itself and tried to reopen the open-air shelter, he is assuring everyone that the cops will be down there in a minute. I don't know how he knows this unless he's dating the police chief's wife. I would never suggest such a thing, of course. But, you know, I mean, it's a strange kind of situation, but frankly, quite predictable. I saw this coming months away. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless is a perfidious group, it has to be said. They have lied to you, they've broken their word, and they don't even want to, obviously they don't want to be publicly accountable for it, but the drones and clowns who sit on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as you saw yesterday, I think you were at that meeting, Dan, didn't even want to hear the promises made in their name by their negotiating representative. I mean, in theory, if you guys got a lawyer, you could sue their butts off. I mean, in theory, of course, the difficulties of getting lawyers in Santa Cruz, the perfect progressive community, if you're perfectly progressive, I suppose, or progressively perfect, it's progressively worse and worse, actually, it's really a real problem getting an attorney. I tried to get an attorney yesterday to come to that Citizens Committee for the Homeless Executive Board meeting, which, for your information out there, is the last Thursday of every month, 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church. What's going to happen in the next 48 hours, Dan, at least both as far as you're concerned? Are you going to be engaging in any protests, you think? Are any of the campers interested in doing something if they learn that they absolutely have no other choice, hide out or get out? It's the Yokoyama or Hokimama solution, as I call it. Councilmember Yokoyama had that solution back in 1991. Her solution was, it was suggested to her that people should be, she actually at one time championed the right to sleep in a vehicle, at least not to be ticketed without a warning. And when she got to be on the city council, no, we have to have low-income housing for those people, or else they'll get, or else they're completely illegal, and that's just how it is. Because campsites are too good for them, are too bad for them. They're too good for campsites. So, hey, we only want those people who can live in houses. I'm not, of course, saying the that's the subtext. The text for the city council members and for Mayor Mike Rodkin is, fall asleep after 11 o'clock, hide out or get out. And hiding out, of course, can be done in a shelter if you're able to get into a shelter. But what are the campers going to do, Dan? What are you going to do?
Well, as far as the campers, a couple questions you asked. One was would I be in a protest? And of course I will, because the way I see it is a few handful of people on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the City Council are designating all this, these things about the homeless people and everything, and that doesn't really represent the citizens as a whole, because even in the newspaper today, it showed interviews with people, and every single person that they interviewed in the paper, and it was a regular citizens, had showed a very positive support for the homeless. Yes, they should have a place, and so these normal citizens, or what they're in a sense saying is, yes, they don't mind if their tax money is being used to help people who are poor and homeless and things like that. And I definitely will support any kind of protest whatsoever. There's been a lot of inhumanity done in this move. A lot of people lost their entire belongings, and some of them lost their dogs. They had to get rid of their dogs, and just a whole lot of things that.
What do you think is going to happen on the first, Dan? I mean,
that was the other question. Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering what are the campers going to do? Are most of them going to try to just sort of slink away, or are they going to get together? I mean, I suggested to the campers without success that everybody march back to the open air shelter, however obnoxious it is, because it was promised to them. It is illegally, there's a legal contract made, as far as I'm concerned, even though it was a verbal contract, and just go right back down there and set up camp, and if the Citizens Committee wants to call the cops, then call the cops they will. But again, I guess, there's problems. People have warrants, people have other things to do in their lives than fight with the court system and the police. But the question, I guess, eventually comes down to,
are you in better shape hiding out and getting hit individually, or taking the risk of getting hit individually under the city's sleeping ban, or is it better to do so at the optimum moment where it's clearest the hypocrisy and abuse of power and callousness that's going on here, and the lies that are taking place? I mean, the citizenry has been told about these lies. I told them on KSCO this morning. Actually, KSCO radio, 1080 AM, by the way, for those of you who want to know, a notorious right-wing station 98% of the time, also gives me airtime, probably because I attack the city council, whom they also hate for other reasons. But they aired the news that I still can't get into the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which is Citizens Committee for the Homeless had a legal deal with the campers to keep them there essentially until February, or to renegotiate it if there were rain problems. No renegotiation took place, therefore the deal stands. So all their talk about closing the campground is a violation of that contract. That doesn't get out into the media. But it's still true. And I think community members can take a stand with campers wherever they go. If they choose to go to Lighthouse Field, if they choose to go to the Poganip, if they choose to stay in New Brighton Beach, if they choose to go back to the open-air shelter, I think people should take a stand with them. And I encourage people to call Barbara Riverwoman to volunteer your help. She's a community activist who's in very close contact with the New Brighton Beach campers, 425-5939. That's 425-5939. If you want to be a part of a hotline that lets people know about the situation with campers, and so that we can get immediate information and then possibly show up at the site of any potential police action, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's 423-4833. That's my phone. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I think there are things we can do. I think that the decisions and actions of the city authorities, the county authorities, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless do depend on how strongly the community responds to support you. What do you think, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. If the citizens of Santa Cruz knew the particulars of what's happened here, they would definitely come to our aid. And this is something that, unfortunately, some of the media has kind of clouded over and edited out the actual facts and the actual truth of what was happening there. Also, the campers on January 1, the general consensus is they're all coming back to Santa Cruz. We're still going to have a homeless population, and they're going to be in the hills somewhere, and I do believe that there are more people now that are willing to go to protest than ever before, because they have finally seen the reality of what these people are like. And
speaking of protest, Dan, I want to let your audience know that although I'm scrambling around to get together a protest on first night, which is of course New Year's Eve, when they have their dream Disneyland mall scene where 15,000 folks from all over the world come to Santa Cruz to have a wonderful time with the strolling jugglers and the musicians and all that sort of thing. We're talking about, of course, the paid musicians, not the grubby poor homeless musicians or the musicians who are street musicians. People are coming to town for this, and I may well be in town myself, hopefully offering free food, if I can, at least a hot soup, to people in front of certain businesses where there has been discrimination against the poor. And one of those businesses, as some of you may know who's been following, well, even the Sentinel mentioned it on Wednesday, is the ID building across from Bookshop Santa Cruz. The ID building is managed by a man named Stuart Martin. Martin is a notorious anti-homeless man. He has assaulted homeless people. He has filed false police reports. He is engaged in slander. He has barred homeless people from his shop. He has maligned them. His most recent action, which produced a protest against him on Wednesday, was he shoved a homeless man down the street. He kicked him out of the store, declared he was a thief, and said all homeless people are thieves. The man was simply trying to buy some merchandise and had been frequently seen across the street panhandling. He's been around regularly for months. He's a young guy. And we attempted to confront him on this. I called him up and said, look, what's your side of the story? Of course, he hung up on me. Stuart Martin isn't really interested in getting the facts out, and I guess he didn't have a story straight at the moment. So it could be on New Year's Eve we'll be down there serving hot soup and trying to make things kind of hot for those businesses that have seen fit to harass homeless people and homeless activists. And this is a real thing. We're not concocting the issue. I don't particularly want to be out there on New Year's Eve. In fact, I don't even know if I will. I'm gonna actually judge from the number of calls coming into my phone, 423-HUFF, how many people want to support this action, and based on that response, I'll decide whether I'm going to be out there or not. So if you want to be a part of a first night action, in which people are being served hot food, I'm going to try to get a hot soup out there for the poor, and in connection with a demonstration that demands a change in anti-homeless policies of businesses and cafes downtown, be there and do give me a call and let me know that you want to be there and you're going to be there, and or you want to provide some kind of support for this action if you can't be there. And my number again is 423-HUFF. Now, independently of all that, I'd like to suggest that the ID building does have a phone number. The building, the business, the ID, has a phone number, 426-4717. That's right. Get out your pencils and paper. 426-4717. For those of you who are out of town hearing this show, it's area code 408, 426-4717. And give them a call and ask to talk to either Stuart Martin or his mother, Mona Martin, who actually owns the business, and suggest that you would like to see an end to anti-homeless policies. You would like to see, I would like to see Stuart Martin fired, if not given a sabbatical from the business until such time as he changes his ways. We have issued an extensive wanted flyer on Stuart Martin detailing his offenses, and perhaps at one show I will bore everybody to death by reading the litany of offenses of this particular individual. I mean, he really is a notorious case. But of course, the businesses downtown have colluded in passing the downtown ordinances, led by so liberal a figure as Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty. Neil Coonerty is the man who gave us the law that makes it illegal to sit down near a shop, that makes it a misdemeanor if you ask for spare change twice after dark, however peacefully, within a, I guess it's a month period, something like that. That's up to 6 months in jail, folks, for a peaceful request. This is what's called intimidating the poor out of town and out of sight. And this is the official policy of the City Council of Santa Cruz with its new hosts program, actually not so new anymore, February 1994, and its old downtown ordinances. Whatever Mayor Mike Rodkin may blow at you in terms of wonderful talk about wonderful social services and equal enforcement of the laws and codes of conduct, the actual effect of these laws and the actual intention of these laws is quite clear and is recognized by people throughout the country. It has nothing to do with a code of behavior for everybody. It has to do with privatizing public spaces and essentially extending merchant power out into the sidewalks, constricting that tiny bit of public land, public area, still available to everybody, including the poor. That's what our liberal Santa Cruz has done. You want to fight that? Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You want to tell the city council it's time to change those laws, time to give people like Greg a chance to be able to vend handmade wares in public, time to allow street musicians and homeless people with dogs an opportunity, provided they aren't littering on the streets or fighting with their dogs, a chance to be present in public without being criminalized. Give a call to city council, 429-3550. All these things are important. Also, so are letters to the editor. We've had a media blitz recently here because of the determined stand of the New Brighton State Beach River Street refugees who have 48 hours left, folks. 48 hours of legal status out there. It's a crisis for them. And in a way, it's a crisis for everyone because it is a rare situation where homeless people really get spotlighted to the extent that they have been spotlighted. I think one of the reasons Mayor Rotkin appeared on the air is his ego is just as big as mine. He likes to talk the way I do. He likes to get his message out. The other reason is that this issue has been hitting the papers and the media daily, and so he feels a need to respond to these questions. But this isn't the norm. We don't usually have this kind of spotlight on homeless people. It becomes a Christmas compassion issue for a while, and then it disappears. And it takes lots of ranting and raving and demonstrating and protesting to get the issue back on even the back pages of the local paper. So we're lucky now. We have that opportunity. The public has been sort of alerted that something is happening. Most of them don't know the Citizens Committee has been breaking its word right and left. Most of them don't know the mayor has been covering for the Citizens Committee and wouldn't allow a solution even if it presented itself. Most people don't know that. But they're in a position to listen now because we have their attention, because the media has at least focused on the fact that something is going on. So if you want to be part of a demonstration, encourage me. I ain't got no car at the moment. I am a man without a vehicle, so that's rather difficult for me. I, too, have to deal with holiday problems with my family. I want to go see them. But if I hear the demand for action downtown on first night is big enough, I will stay in town and I will do that action. If you want that to happen, if you're going to be a part of that action, you give me a call at 423-4833 today. You do it now and tell me that's what you want. You leave me a message. You leave your phone number. Tell me what you'll do to support it, whether it'll be giving away food, whether it'll be being present with a camera, whether it'll be calling other people on the telephone. You let me know that, and maybe we'll do some organizing here around that issue. That's candid talk from me to you. You know, there are a lot of things happening. A lot of things happening that, and I hope I haven't missed any phone calls. I keep...
No, I've been watching it.
Ah, good. Dan's been watching. Give a call to the ID building and tell Stuart Martin to adopt a new policy toward homeless people. 426-4717. And then the other target that we had the other day, our concern about that couple that got kicked out for giving a homeless person a cup of coffee, for buying a pariah person a cup of coffee. The Java House, the oh-so-hip Java House. That phone number, if I can find the darn thing, is somewhere on this page. And by cracky, I'm going to find it. Or maybe I'm not going to find it. It's possible that you may have to look it up in the phone book under J-A-V-H-A, H-O-U-S-E, Java House. Yeah, at the moment, apparently, the Java House number is not with us, but you can give them a call too, and you can talk to them about changing their policies. The situation with Java House is kind of a special one, because a lot of people say to me, not the Java House, they're such a laid-back, cool group of people, you know, and why, how could they possibly do that kind of thing? I mean, you gotta have the wrong people. I mean, they're just hipper than thou, man. I mean, come on. But the fact of the matter is, no, they've kicked out people for ridiculous causes, and then, you know, okay, people can make mistakes, and even the Java House can make a mistake. Let's forgive them our mistakes. Then when they're confronted with their mistakes, they lie about it. And they continue to maintain this intransigent, rigid position. Wanton Dave Jacobs, I mentioned before, smoked a joint half a block away from the Java House, although the manager claims he smoked a joint in front of the Java House, but that makes no difference. He was kicked out because a planning commissioner said that they regarded that as a bad sign and that they didn't want to see that kind of public marijuana smoking going on. And I mentioned this, I was called a snitch because I said, Kevin, the owner of the Java House, smokes marijuana. Well, folks, and you can quote me, I smoke marijuana. Almost everybody I know smokes marijuana. It ain't no secret that lots of us smoke marijuana. But I don't go around busting people and exiling people who smoke marijuana because I'm trying to curry favor with public officials downtown. And then I don't lie about it. I asked Kevin that question, that very same question, at the demonstration on Tuesday. I said, Kevin, isn't it true that you smoke marijuana? Is that right? He said, no, I don't. Well, maybe Kevin's given up marijuana. But I think Kevin has given up the truth. He's given up an awareness and a responsibility to be honest about these matters in the community because his business image is at stake. And I find that utterly contemptible, particularly when he likes to pose as hipper than thou, particularly when he and his staff have barred person after person from the Java House using numerous pretexts. I was barred because I was told that I was responsible for graffiti on the bathroom wall. His bathroom wall is covered with graffiti. I asked him, well, how do you know I wrote graffiti on your bathroom wall? Have you got an eye in the sky in the bathroom in there? Have you been doing handwriting analysis? Or have you perhaps been noticing that the graffiti on the wall tends to go along the lines of what's been written recently in my publication, The Street Shit Sheet, which says, how come you're still barring Wanton Dave from the Java House after a year and a half or 2 years for smoking a joint half a block away just because a planning commissioner made some sort of complaint about that? Huh? You know, Kevin doesn't want to deal with these things. He loves to use ridicule. He loves to use his fraternal loyalty thuggish bunch that he has hanging around there, all the cooler-than-now folks are going to keep patting him on the back and telling him he's doing a great thing. And it sounds like it's almost a personal issue, but it's not. I'm concerned. I didn't ask Kevin to to give people money. I didn't ask Kevin to tolerate abusive behavior in his cafe. I made a couple of requests. I said that there should be a policy of non-discrimination against homeless people. There should be a policy that if someone is evicted, that eviction will be reviewed in 30 days. These are the kinds of concerns that I presented to Kevin, and I would present to any business or cafe. I think what we need downtown is a chance to make a new start. If people make a mistake, if people, for one reason or another, if a problem arises between the management, whoever's fault it is, whether it's an individual who's somewhat out of line, or whether some management person abuses her or his authority, okay, let's look over that situation. Let's have a hearing on it. Let's give at least some kind of fair process so that people don't have to feel that their only alternative is to break windows or be treated like a pariah or stay away forever. We need more dialogue. We need mediation. We need people talking to each other and really coming up with common solutions here. And that's one of the reasons that I'm pleased, that we have homeless people talking directly to public officials. Although it's not happening with the public official you heard today, Mayor Mike Rotkin, because he's decided on the solution, and just as the Citizens Committee for the Homeless decided, I should say Paul Merceau, decided unilaterally on his solution, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, with their noses up in the air yesterday at their board of directors meeting, decided not to hear what actually went on and not to question what went on, and just, you know, homeless people in the cold, homeless people denied a place to pitch a tent through the winter in spite of an explicit promise, in spite of a legal contract that was verbally made, in spite of a recording of such a contract. Oh, well, no, let's go on to the next subject. Let's close down the meeting rather than discuss that, because that, in fact, is what happened. They adjourned the meeting when we tried to bring up that issue. They claimed that we were too disruptive. But the contact between homeless people and ordinary citizens, whether they're business owners, whether they're politicians, whether they're bureaucrats and poverty pimps like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, is vital. It's vital because they're not going to do anything unless you make a demand on them, I'm afraid, or they'll just keep doing what they've always done. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I think ordinary citizens, as Dan here was saying, have a much more compassionate, sensible, less authoritarian view of how to deal with the problems of the homeless. They want a campground? Hey, why not let them have a campground, man? I mean, you know, as long as they're not running all over everybody else's property. In fact, isn't it more likely that if there's a legal place for people to be, you won't find someone sleeping on your doorstep the next morning because there actually is a place for them to go? You know, you won't have people hanging out downtown all day because there actually is a legal area, which there is not anymore, by the way, since January or December 19th, thanks to Mayor Mike Rotkin and Paul Merceau of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. You won't find them panhandling downtown if there's a legal place for them to be during the day. You know? These are sensible things that ordinary people, I think, agree on. Because you really can't disagree on them. But if you're a bureaucrat who has to deal with flack from conservatives, or who has taken a position in the past and you want to cover your ass and maintain the same position, or if you are simply rigid for one reason or another and are going to insist on maintaining that rigidity, then you don't have access to the ordinary wisdom of the streets, the ordinary wisdom of the common person. And I don't just mean the street person who's poor. I mean the ordinary citizen downtown, who were, as Dan points out, asked a question about the campers in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel. And, hey, the Sentinel is not a liberal newspaper. I got news for you, folks. You know, it's, you would like to see homeless people gone. And just like the other businesses downtown. But, I mean, even they are acknowledging through their news stories, they're communicating the voice of the citizenry and the community, which is, it makes more sense to have legal areas for people to be able to take care of their own problems. And that doesn't mean massive city services. That's bullshit. I mean, that is straight double talk from Mike Rotkin. He keeps saying, we can't open new city services. Hey, you're going to have the police as a city service collecting people off the streets because you have taken action to close an area that was very economic, that was very cost-effective. And it could have been continued through the winter, but you were so afraid that somehow this would cause everybody from Newark to Toronto to come rushing to Santa Cruz to take advantage of a muddy field. I mean, this is, one has to say, it's hard to fathom the motives of these people other than to say perhaps that they're in power, and they're going to do what they're going to do, and you're going to have to like it. They've made their decisions. And if they don't stand by their decisions, well, then no one will respect their power. And of course, the reason no one will respect their power is not because they don't stand by their decisions. And in fact, the Citizens Committee doesn't stand by their decisions. They made a decision, they lied about it to people, at least they gave their word, and then they broke it. They didn't stand by their decision. They can change their minds whenever the hell they want. And same with Rotkin in the city. Rotkin said, hey, campground's been legal for a year and a half, but bingo, now it's illegal, so the police will come in and bust it, even though we've been saying it's legal for a year and a half. No change in the city council. No additional motions have been passed. No new laws. No findings by the county health department. Nothing like that. Just Mike Rotkin telling us what he and the city police are going to do. Got that? So that is weird, and not weird at all. I guess that's business as usual in Santa Cruz. Looks, as I said, I heard from the Barber River woman who's working with the River Street refugees that, and I guess you heard that from I was either Billy or Dan, that an area near Natural Bridges near the homeless garden is being considered for a temporary campground that. Campers are really are fed up with the Coral Street open air shelter, and they're not interested in going back there at the moment. And I kept proposing that because I felt that they had a promise there, and that they have some legal standing there, and that it's next to homeless services, and it's a place that they have successfully been able to deal with for a number of months before. But in all probability, they won't go back there. And to find out where they're going to go and then how you can help them, you can give a call to Barbara Riverwoman at 425-5935. Brimstone Barbara, as I call her, is a tireless worker for the rights of the people in this campground, the River Street refugees, as they are now calling themselves. And they need help. They need to know that you want to support them. They need to know that for the next 48 hours, they're not alone, and after that, they're not alone. I've gotten reports from Food Not Bonds in San Francisco, which I can talk to you about. I'm trying to recruit people for a satire group. You know, all this stuff begins to sound so ridiculous. We need a comedy group to be doing some comedy around this issue. And if you want to do some kind of comedy work, if you've had any theater experience or want to do a kind of a fire sign theater kind of thing, give me a call at 423-HUFF. I would love to get together a weekly or monthly or bi-weekly comedy tape about current events in Santa Cruz that affect poor people. I think we could do a bang-up job. We've had some comedy stuff broadcast from Berkeley called the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe from Cornerstone Carol Denny, who's done wonderful work up there in Berkeley fighting for the rights of poor people, and has all made it extremely funny in her Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe stuff. I think we could do the same thing down here. And I'm also looking for any people who are poor or homeless who use the Homeless Community Resource Center regularly to give us some reports on what's going on out there. How's the free meal going now that it's moved indoors? Is it okay? They've torn down the covered area that has for years been used for the free meal out at the Back 40, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. They've torn it down and they've fenced it off. How are things going out there at the Homeless Community Resource Center? If you're out there, if you're using the services, give me a call at 423-HUFF. Let me know what's going on out there. How are the staff treating you? They're doing pretty good. Are there problems developing? Are things better than ever? What's happening? What about during the day? Is there enough space for people to be during the day? Is there enough space for people to store their stuff? These are questions we want answers to, and you listeners can give the answers. And incidentally, if you don't use those services, go out there and talk to people about them. Talk to ask how things are going. Tell them that you heard about this stuff on the radio. You're concerned about the issues and wondering what's cooking. And start establishing a dialogue. I'd like to point out, by the way, regarding the demonstrations against the discrimination at the Java House and the ID building, that I have requested of Stuart Martin and also of Kevin Fuhrer, who is the owner of the Java House, that there be a mediation around this issue. I've asked for a boycott of these businesses, by the way. I encourage you to walk right up to the Java House, walk right in and say, I'm not buying here until you have a non-discrimination statement posted on your door and until you agree to let in people that have been kicked out unfairly and start doing some kind of fair process. That's what I'm asking everyone to do. Call the Java House or go into the Java House or go into the IDOD building and say that. I'm supporting the boycott. But before I did that, I called up both businesses, and I've also asked mediator Kim Hallinan to get in touch with those businesses and tell them that we're happy to meet, to sit down and talk these things over, because I am happy to say that not all businesses are bigoted in the way that these two businesses seem to be at the moment. I have my problems with Bookshop Santa Cruz, and I think that the Bookshop Santa Cruz is on my boycott list. But I want to commend Neil Coonerty for dealing with a problem that arose 6 months ago. Neil Coonerty is the owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz and a former mayor, and currently in a struggle with Crown Books, which actually I support. I support Coonerty against Crown Books in this matter. But of course, I'm also banned from Coonerty's bookshop. If I walk in there, I get arrested. Pity. Because of the fact that I very strongly opposed his downtown ordinances, his anti-homeless laws. But the thing I want to give Coonerty credit for is when a street craftswoman was harassed at the Georgiana's Cafe and told she couldn't come back because they thought she was displaying her wares at a table, Coonerty and Georgiana's Cafe were contacted by mediator Kim Hallinan, and they talked. And within 2 days, the entire problem was worked out and the woman was allowed back in the cafe. I mean, that is commendable. That is commendable. That is the kind of action we want to see happening. Instead of stupid hosts running around harassing people for dogs, harassing people for sitting down on the sidewalk, harassing people for hacky sack, harassing people for having backpacks, I want to see reasonable accommodations reached. Instead of the food court telling a man with a 3-year-old child that he can't use the bathroom, I want to see some kind of understandings reached. Maybe how about a public bathroom open at night? I mean, how about opening up those parking garage bathrooms at night? I've asked for that before, too. I mean, we are in a position in Santa Cruz to make sensible changes, and really, with very little effort or expense. I wrote about Ray McMinn. Ray McMinn is the man who is in jail in Virginia, who was deported to Virginia after a preposterous parole violation warrant was forwarded. Ray has served, I don't know, something like 19 years for stealing $8 out of a 40-year sentence. I mean, one says it and one kind of can't believe what one says after you look back on it, but that's what happened to him. They want to keep him for another 8 years. His parole hearing, I think, is coming up in a few days. We're going to try to have him sent back here. If you want to help with that, give a call to 423-HUFF, 4833. Ray was on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. He was the token homeless person. He didn't take positions I agreed with. I kind of regarded him as a house nigger, to speak candidly. But I also thought that he was a man who did not deserve to be treated the way he did by authorities. I'm writing to him. He deserves to be released and returned to this community. That's one of the few good things the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is doing, is trying to advocate on Ray McMinn's behalf. If you want to help with that, give me a call at 423-HUFF, or give Daryl Darling a call at 458-1958. He's on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. He's concerned about Ray McMinn. You can help that. You can also tell Darling to keep his word to the campers at the same time. That would be a good idea. 458-1958. That's the number of Daryl Darling's multimillion-dollar bed and breakfast house over on the west side. You know, apparently people are good enough to come to his bed and breakfast, but not good enough to stay in the open air shelter, because that's now a barren field and will be for the next month. Well, you know, I am going to try to find that tape of the Java House demonstrations, and we're going to have to kind of hunt around a little bit here, because I'm always having trouble finding my tape recorder. But here it is. Whoa. Can we dig it? We may be having another tape turnover point coming in a moment here. I'm warning Dragonstar Dan, who's helping me in the studio with this. Yeah, here's a tape about the Java House demo. Let's go directly into that and let's see how it sounds and see what... what we can draw from it. This was kind of a chaotic situation there a couple days ago. The Sentinel did a story on it on Wednesday, and it actually put into the story some of the demands that we had around the issue of the Java House. And actually, I have that story right here. I even got my picture in the paper, which, of course, is the only reason I did the demonstration, according to the critic. But the demands were quite simple. The demands were fair hearing policy, a 30-day reexamination of evictions, amnesty for all exclusions more than 6 months old, and an agreement to mediate future disputes. Doesn't sound too unreasonable to me, but, you know, I mean, of course, I don't own the Java House, and I'm not trying to pretend to be the hippest guy in town while maintaining arbitrary policies about who can come in and who can't. I mean, I think they really boo-booed big time when they evicted this couple, Leslie and John, for buying a cup of coffee for a forbidden person outside. I mean, how can you possibly evict someone for that without seeming ridiculously arbitrary? You know, they can claim I vandalized their bathroom. You know, they can claim that they had three different reasons that they evicted me. Most recently they've claimed that I was pushing my literature on people in the Java House. I've given away literature in the Java House, but I don't really push my literature on people, and I'd like to know exactly who complained, if somebody complained about that. I don't think that was the reason. I think the reason was they were being criticized in my publications, and they wanted to have me out. Well, let's hear a little bit about the Java House demo, see if we can tune in and get into that. It may or may not be queued up properly. Let's just see. Should be coming on in a minute. And we're waiting breathlessly.
December 26, 1995, about 2:10, we're in front of the Java House with Dragon Sard Dan and Peppercorn Penny. And the weather's pretty mild. Of demonstrators, there are three. Hey, we got more folks showing up, and here's a couple of customers. Your name, sir?
Curtis DuPont.
And your name?
Diane Williams.
Now, Curtis, are you the man who all this brouhaha is about?
Well, yeah, kind of. I don't know why I'm so popular.
And how you were refused service here at the Java House?
Yeah, well, they had, for some reason, they imagined that I stole bikes or something around here.
Right.
And so then they told everybody in town I was stealing bikes, and then they kicked me out. You know, but mostly it's because I don't have enough money to go to their college or whatever, or be in their sorority or whatever it is, you know. Or I'm not a neo-Nazi. I don't know what it is.
But in any case, you actually were here yesterday when Leslie and John tried to get you a cup of coffee.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and they tried to give me a cup of coffee, then they kicked them out just for giving me a cup of coffee.
So because this couple here tried to get you a cup of coffee, they kicked this couple out.
Right.
And you were a witness to that.
Yeah, right in front of everybody.
Well, that's kind of strange.
And then they had some guy come pushing him and stuff, trying to get him to get in a fight and everything.
Who was the guy who came pushing?
He didn't even work here.
He didn't even work. Well, probably a sympathizer. A sympathizer with the bigotry bistro.
Right.
That could be it.
Yeah, because the guy with the apron on, he was this little shrimpy guy. He was all like standing behind this other guy, you know.
I
know,
like something about
my buddy.
It came from another source.
I wanted to tell you, though, on your right hand side.
You want to be on? You want to be on?
I wanted to tell you that I called the Downtown Association.
Go ahead, Mike.
And they wanted to hear about this new
spot. Wake up, bigotry. Check it out before you have coffee here. Read our flyer.
Then they wanted
to. Wake up, bigotry at the Java House.
They spoke and made a complaint.
They've been kicking people out.
We got coffee here on the sidewalk.
They called the Downtown Association, and they wanted the complaint. And they were supposed to have called them and talked to them or come in here.
Oh, really?
And talk to them. So you may want to do that sometime, too.
Well, I'll say, but that's what they're trying to do.
Customers
are going away!
It's about 2:25. We're in front of the Java House here. We have John and Deanne. John's over the sign, Java House sucks. Mike is here with a cap on, looking warm for the winter. Jose is walking back and forth. This is Forrest, drinking some
boycott.
And it's kicking out Kevin, folks. He's arrived on the scene. He's reading our flyer. Let's see what he has to say.
Wait.
having an inner enlightening experience of compassion and concern.
Could be, could be.
It may be.
Kevin, you have any comments on this flyer? He's ignoring us. He's walking past us. He's going to go talk to his friends on the Sentinel. Oh, well.
I just talked to the guy in there who has a really different story, and he sounds like a very reasonable
Stuart.
Person. Yeah. I mean, he says that a totally different story.
Oh, really? Well, I believe it. I mean, I believe he has a totally different story.
Uh-huh. You could ask her. She was right there.
Leslie.
Leslie, right there.
Leslie, one more.
We bought coffee for some people outside. When they asked us not to buy coffee for the people outside anymore, and we said, well, you know, John was saying, well, he didn't think that they had the right to tell us what to do with the coffee once we bought it and take it outside. And
wake up and drop it out.
And so when he argued with them a little bit, they said, you've joined the list. You're kicked out.
We're telling employees
that they're wage slaves. What are they doing yet? They're working for $4.25 an hour. Yeah, they're working for $4.25 an hour, and they take it upon themselves to kick people out, to act like they have the right to tell people where to be. They tell us, go over there where you belong.
So he was saying that it was this kind of harassment.
That was after they came over and told us that we couldn't buy coffee for our friends.
He's got a reporter in there.
Well, you were the one who was there. I mean, we're not supposed to be inside either.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a crowd of people here. Let's talk about it.
And it's New York. Here's the man who kicked the folks out.
Can you talk about it? Is this the guy that we're talking about?
He's afraid to talk about it on tape. He doesn't want to be held accountable for what he has to say.
Well, that's fair. I'd rather let him talk than
have to. Okay, I'll go over here and let you guys talk. But I will be back.
She's trying to find out.
All right. Check it out. Did you guys get a flyer?
You're listening to a tape of a demonstration at the Java House.
Just a moment.
Tuesday, the day after Christmas, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The issue was...
Well, it's a good question. I'm about 59, actually. Yeah, I'm getting older, you know. I'm 48, you scumbag. What do you mean 59? I'm 33. I don't know how old I am. How old do I look?